Good, so welcome back to our second edition of Pshischa on the Parsha. We're going to start with a quick idea from the Sakachever. The Sakachever was the father of who we quoted last week. Who did we quote last week? The Shem Yishmuel. The Shem Yishmuel, or of Shmuel Borenstein. So his father was Avram, Rav Avram Borenstein, more well known, not as the Sakachever perhaps, at least in these parts, but as the Avne Nezer. Who was the Avne Nezer, and what's his connection to Pshischa? Anyone know? Who was the Avne Nezer's father-in-law? It was the Kutzker Rebbe. The Kutzker Rebbe, Rav Nachman and the Morgenstern. And the Kutzker Rebbe, there's some stories about him. There are a lot of stories about the Kutzker Rebbe independently, but there are stories about him and his son-in-law that are particularly enjoyable. But the Avne Nezer was a gadol b'Torah, much like the Kutzker was, but still Hasidish. And in his Perush on Torah, he has an interesting line, something that I just wanted to give over because we mentioned it on Monday night in our Mishlei class from the Malbim, or at least the way I'm going to interpret it is much like the Malbim says. When we have the scene of Bilam and the donkey, right? Bilam and the Aslan. So the donkey. What does the donkey say to him? What does the donkey say? Why did you hit me?
These 3 times.
These 3 times. But how does he say the words 3 times? What have I done to you? Kihikisani zesh shalosh regalim. What are the shalosh regalim? Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Yeah. Right? So Rashi already says, I think Rashi says. What does Rashi say here? Ramazlo. Atam evakesh lakor uma hachogeya shalosh regalim b'shana. It's an interesting line. Right? The donkey is saying to him, you want to destroy the people. Do you know who these people are? These people go to Yerushalayim three times a year. They do the Shalosh Regalim. It was a hint, right? It was a hint to him. You hit me these 3 times, but he used the word Shalosh Regalim, which obviously he could have used other words. But he says Shalosh Regalim as a message to Bilam that these are the people that go on Shalosh Regalim. Who the heck cares?
Some donkey, though.
Right, it's a chachma of the donkey. Obviously, Hashem is telling him what to say. But what does the Shalosh Regalim have to do with anything? Right, so Bilam is hitting a donkey. He's challenging the Jewish people. Okay, fine. So the donkey is trying to say to Bilam, you know these people, they're so committed to Hashem. They're so committed that they'll do anything. You're not going to stop them. But he could have used any mitzvah for that. Why doesn't he say, these are the people that they do pidyon b'chorim. These are the people that do sukkahs. Why does he say specifically all 3 regalim? Why, these are the people that keep Shabbos. Like, why is this the hint? Why is the Shalosh Regalim specifically the hint of what the donkey's trying to tell, to show Bilam how the Jewish people are going to win out? Why is that specifically the thing? So the Sakachever of Avram Borenstein, the Avne Nezer, says the following idea. He says that what does it mean to be Olo L'Regel? What it means to be Olo L'Regel is the ability to have a home, but to be willing to leave it for an extended period of time. Right? What did you do for a Shalosh Regalim? I mean, nowadays it might be different. Mirtz Hashem soon, we'll see how different it is. But sure. Back then, what did you have to do? Well, yeah, well, depending on the Yontif, you had to give different mitzvos. Yeah.
Involves a Shalosh Regalim.
Okay, that good. In some ways, it's encompassing of your entire lifestyle, is all leading up to the Shalosh Regalim. But more on a psychological level, which is why I'm particularly a fan of Pshischa, because they have much more, they're very psychologically insightful, I think. And the Avne Nezer says that when it comes to the Jewish people doing Aliyah L'Regel, so what it means is that you have to have the ability to leave what you have behind. Because to go Aliyah L'Regel, we know from Hilchos Mashiv Arecha Moed HaGeshem, right? We know from Hussein Bracha. Why don't we say Hussein Bracha by Sukkos, by Shmini Atzeres? Why don't we switch over right away? The Gemara says, because we give the people time to get back to their homes. Mm-hmm. So how long is it between Sukkos and Mesein Bracha? It's like it's almost a month. And it depends on the year, because it goes by the, you know, it goes by the sun cycle. So sometimes it could be a long time. It could be a long time. So what that shows you is, it takes a long time to get to Yerushalayim, and it takes a long time to go back home. So these are people that aren't just going to do a mitzvah. These are people that are sacrificing all of their possessions. They're leaving their homes for at least a month in order to do Aliyah L'Regel. Says the Sakachever, says the Avne Nezer, the son-in-law of the Kutzker Rebbe, he says, this is what Bilam doesn't realize. Bilam thinks that these people are the same type of people that he is, which is that they can get attached to their possessions, that they can get so bogged down with the daily living that they forget about Hashem. Says the donkey, no, they do the Shalosh Regalim. The Shalosh Regalim is the greatest expression of the fact that they don't care for earthly possessions. They don't care for what they have at home. The Shalosh Regalim, they're just going to leave it. Right? And he says that there's an interesting halacha. This is sort of like an Avnei Nezer taich. The Avnei Nezer says that the halacha is, if someone doesn't have a home, then they're not chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel. Says it's a prat in the din that if you don't have a home that you have to leave, so then you don't have a chiyuv to go to Yerushalayim. You might be staying at somebody's house in Haifa or something like that. Doesn't matter. It's not your house. They're not your possessions. You're not going to be leaving anything. So there's no chashivas in your aliyah l'regel. There's nothing important that you're doing. So says the Avnei Nezer, that's what the Asun is saying to Bilam. These people, they sacrifice, but they do mitzvahs in order to sacrifice. Right? It's that opportunity that they have to leave it that they take advantage of. Whereas Bilam, says the Avnei Nezer, Bilam and the nations of the world oftentimes look at their stuff and they want, in the words of the Avnei Nezer, they want a kirvas Elokim. They want to get close to Hashem. The only problem they have is they can't let go of what they have. Right? Yeah, would it be nice if we could connect to the person that just did all these great makos in Mitzrayim? The person that just, the being that just split the Yamsuf? Of course we would like a relationship with that person. But what can we do? We can't leave our other stuff. We can't leave our, you know, insert heavenly, you know, earthly desires here. We can't leave those things. So it was this aspect of the Jewish people that only they had. There's a mice, I don't remember who was. I don't know, it doesn't make sense that it's the Chavetz Chaim, but every time I think of the Maisa, I remember the Chavetz Chaim. The Maisa is that there's some Talmidim passing by the Golden Gate Bridge, and they have their Rebbe there, and all the Talmidim go to look out the window to look at the Golden Gate Bridge, right? And they go to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe is just sitting there, and he's learning. They want to tell the Rebbe, by the way, we're passing the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, we're right there. So he says, you know, they say to him, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see the Golden Gate Bridge. And the Rebbe says back to them, it's also a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see the Golden Gate Bridge and not see it in order to learn. Right? This is your only chance to give up the Golden Gate Bridge in order to learn. Tomorrow, you're not going to be by the Golden Gate Bridge to give it up. Right? Tomorrow, you're going to be somewhere else. You're not going to have a shemitzchar when you're leaving something. So he says the same thing here. The Avnei Nezer, the Asun, is saying to Bilam, the Jewish people are people that aren't connected to this earth. They're connected to their more important things, the Shalosh Regalim, to the Beis HaMikdash. That was just an interesting intro because we said the same thing by the Malbim on Monday night. If you remember, we talked about the word Yisurim, like Musar. Right, when Shlomo HaMelech, the beginning of Mishlei, says to teach Musar, Chachma u'Musar, so the Malbim explained that the word Musar is from the word Asur, or Yisur, which is to bind. That in order to really take in the Musar, you have to be willing to restrict yourself, to cut some things out of your life. So that's what the Malbim had explained, and similar to what we had said then, that it could be a very big struggle nowadays in the world we live in with all of the preponderance of available, you know, commercial and entertainment, you know, elements in our society. So it's getting harder and harder for people to cut things away. You know, they like to keep their options open, right? We mentioned some studies about how it makes choices are easier when you have less of them. Right? Too much choice and no choice at all. So we spoke about that on Monday, and it's a similar thing here. The Jewish people are people that are willing to give up what they have for the sake of Hashem, for the sake of doing Aliyah L'Regel. And that's specifically why the Asun was saying that to Bilam, who didn't have that value, but thought the Jewish people would fall into that trap. So that's thought number one, just a connection to Monday night, from the Sakachar, from the Avnei Nezer, the son-in-law of the Kutzker Rebbe. But what I really want to focus on is really a fascinating character in the lore of Pshischa Chassidus, and that is a person named Reb Mordechai Yosef Liner. Does anyone know who Mordechai Yosef Liner was? Mordechai Yosef Liner was a Talmud first of Simcha Bonim of Pshischa, and then he was young, so he wasn't really a very extended Talmud, but he was then a Talmud of the Kutzker Rebbe. He grew up in the town of the Kutzker Rebbe in Tamashav. Ultimately, he starts a chassidus called Ishbitz, which becomes, through his son or his grandson, becomes Radziner. And if anyone familiar with the Radziner Tcheles, ever heard the other Tcheles, which is like dark purple? You've ever seen it? You never seen it? Right? It's like a darker purple. It's called Radziner Tcheles. It's most likely not, you know, Tcheles, which is why no one wears it except for people in Ishbitz Radzin communities. But the Radziner, his grandson, or Gershon Hanuch, came up with it. He went to Italy. He spoke to scientists, etc. But the start of the originer, the founder of the movement of Ishbitz was Rav Mordechai Yosef Leiner. And through this piece, I'm going to introduce to you how exactly Ishbitz comes to be. Because if anyone knows anything about the Kotzker Rebbe, he was somewhat of a polarizing figure, and perhaps the greatest polarization was when the Kotzker Hasidus split in 1839 because of the story I'll tell you through this piece of Torah.
They split from the regular Hasidim, the Baal Shem Tov followers?
No. This is...
The Baal was already there.
This is way past that, yeah. We're in 1839. Baal Shem Tov was 1750s.
Rebbe, yeah.
Yeah, 34. Yeah, we're way down the line at this point. So the third piece of the Ishbitzer writes a book called Mehashiloach. And the truth is, Ishbitzer is somewhat of a controversial figure. He gets a bad rap. Shlomo Carlbach really made him more popular. He was a big fan of Mehashiloach. But he's known for some very dicey concepts of antinomianism. Anyone familiar with that concept? I'm not going to go into it now because there's no point to. But either way, so in the Mehashiloach, he has the following concept about Parshas Balak. The Pasuk says, Bilam says about the Jewish people, Ki lo nachash b'Yaakov v'lo kesem b'Yisrael. Ki es yomar l'Yaakov l'Yisrael ma'apal el, that he basically says about the Jewish people that they don't have any magical components to them, right? They don't use sorcery. And this is one of the brachos that he gives when he was trying to give a curse. Fine. So what does it mean? So obviously on a simple level, it means that the Jewish people don't use sorcery, right? They use Hashem, they use spiritual means, but it's somewhat repetitive. Ki lo nachash b'Yaakov, you don't use the Yaakov, or the Jewish people don't use sorcery. V'lo kesem b'Yisrael, and there's no magic in the Jewish people. So it sounds almost like the same exact phrase, but obviously it's ripe for deeper meaning. And I'm not really sure where he gets some of these pratim from, but they're interesting nonetheless the way he interprets it. He says the following: Hine inyan nachash, which is like nichush, like magical means. Hine nachash hu hisakshus bedavar mibli lahaser davar zemidato. What is hitakshut? Right, dor ikeshu fesaltol. You know, right? Akasha is basically like, you know, deliberative action, right? You're doing it forcefully. You're doing it very on purpose, purposeful action, right? So he says the word nachash. I don't know how he gets this, but the word nachash represents a purposeful action. Mibli lahasir davar zemidato. There's no way you're not going to do it. The kesem hu lehefech. But the word kesem implies the opposite. Tahainu, imhu mesupak bedavar. You don't know if you're doubtful about something. Im laso solo, whether you're going to do it or not. Roa im yelech lo kishura v'chaseder yaseh. If he thinks about it and he calculates and it seems to him like that's the right thing to do, so then he'll do it. V'im lablo yaseh. And if he doesn't think it's the right thing to do, so then he won't do it. It's more of a calculation. It's more of a calculated calculating the risk, calculating whether or not you have to do what you have to do. V'zeo kesem hainu liros kefishe isnag miasmo u'shneyem asurim shalobim komam. That both of these aspects, the aspect of doing something very steadfastly, of doing it purposefully, so that you have to do in its time, and you can't do it in the other time. If it comes to a decision which requires deliberation, which requires more of a calculation to see if it's the right thing to do, you're not allowed to use that fervency. You're not allowed to use that steadfastness. You have to pause. You have to think about it. You're required to hold back. And similarly, if it's something which is obviously something that Hashem wants you to do, and it's obviously something that you should be doing, so then you have to go steadfast. You have to go straight into it purposefully. You can't stop to think about it. You have to be, shameless in doing it. Just go right ahead and do it. No doubting, no hesitancy. If you know for sure this is what Hashem wants, if you know Hashem wants you to do something, you have to go straight for it. Do it with tekufa, with strength, right? With a certain proactivity, right? You're just going straight into it. In a time where someone's not sure, is this something Hashem wants me to do, something Hashem doesn't want me to do? If you can't just jump into it. You can't just do it without thinking about it. And then he quotes the Gemara about Kamosha Matsinu be Gemara, Rav Badak Mimivra, Hainu Hashasfina Basal Nagdo, Blishum Hishtabuso. He said basically, I'll take a boat if it comes right up to me. And the fact that it came right up to him meant that he had to go on the boat. Now, the truth is that this Gemara is a very interesting Gemara because it sounds a lot like Nichash. It sounds like, I'll go if it comes right up, and if it doesn't come right up, I won't go. So the Rishonim handle about what exactly is going on in that Gemara. But again, Ishbitzer is a little bit more out of the box, and he says, no, that's mamish what he's doing. He sees the boats right there. He thinks, that's what Hashem wants from me. I'm going to do it. He just goes and he jumps in and does it. If he didn't have that sign that it came right up to him, he wouldn't have done it. And that's why when it comes to Yaakov, it uses the word kilo nachash. Lo nachash b'Yaakov. What's the situation of Yaakov? What's the difference between Yaakov and Yisrael? The difference of Yaakov and Yisrael, as you might already know, Yaakov is a time of difficulty. Right? You think of Yaakov's life. Right? Getting the wrong girl, and then having to work for the rightful girl, and then the fact that he has to deal with his father-in-law all the time, and then the fact that he has children that are fighting with each other, and then the child, one of them runs away, and the other one tries to go to kill him, and then even later on, he has the situation, he's the one that has to run away because his brother's trying to kill him, and then his sons also do the same thing, and then they're trying to kill Yosef, and he never sees Yosef again, and then the whole thing with Egypt. Yaakov had a tough life, right? That's a tough time of difficulty. Says the Ishbitzer, Kilo nachash b'Yaakov. If you're in a situation of Yaakov, and it's difficult, and your situation is dubious, and it's difficult, and it's doubtful about what you should do, you should do this, you should do that, lo nachash. Don't use the concept of nachash. You don't use the concept of going straight into it. Lo nachash b'Yaakov, when you have a situation of Yaakov, when a situation of Lila, and it's not clear what to do, you don't do nichash, you don't do nechasha, I don't know what the word is that he's using, but you don't go straight into it. You don't go with tekufa, you don't just jump right in. You have to sit back and think about it. And on the flip side, the way that he says, Ki Yaakov nikra ha'adam she'enu b'shlemos ve'od ein libo nimshach achar ratzon Hashem Yisbarach k'mo shemetzim. Okay, interesting line. That when a prophet speaks about the Jewish people in their katnus, in their smallness, when they're not doing well, so it usually calls them Yaakov. Mi Yaakov, Yaakov, ki katanu. V'lachein amar ki lanachash b'yaakov b'shash she'anefesh m'Yisrael mesupak b'davar lo yelch b'akashos. When you're unclear about what to do, you can't just dive right into it. You can't go steadfast. Right? You have to think to yourself, what does Hashem want from me? What should I do in this situation? You have to take all the way, every negia. No preconceived notions that you might have. V'lo kesem b'Yisrael haynu mishalibo nimshach acharas on Hashem. What is Yisrael? Yisrael is representative of the Geula, right? Yisrael is the time that Yaakov beat the angel, right? That's when he gets the name Yisrael, when you can overcome the difficulty, and now you're in the clear. So he says, when it's Yisrael, so lo kasem b'Yisrael. So you can't be mefakfek when it comes to a situation of Yisrael. When it's clear as day, what you're supposed to be doing, lo kasem. You can't sit in there and start calculating. Should I do this? Should I do that? You got to go straight for it and just go for it. That maybe something comes into your mind that you're not going to do it. He says, no, I'm going to do it. Because if you start thinking, if something creeps into your mind and starts making you doubt and hesitate, so then that's already a sign that you're possibly doing something wrong. You have to just go straight for it. As the Shulchan Aruch says at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, at the beginning of Or Chaim, Yiskaber Kari, right? You should wake up like a lion and just jump out of bed. Go straight to Shacharis. Don't even think about it. Right, there's the Mishnah Berurah points out, I think the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch also similarly says that in every season there's a Yetzer Hara in bed. Right, in the summertime, so the Yetzer Hara is it's a short night. I didn't get enough sleep. It's hot outside. I'm not going to schlep out of bed. I want to just relax over here. And in the winter, it's a long night, but it's freezing outside. You want to stay under your blanket. You want to stay in bed. You want to stay warm. So there's always a Yetzer Hara, no matter what season it is. And Rav Yosef Karo says at the beginning, Yisgaber Kari, right? You should get up like a lion. Just get up and you know you have to go to Shacharis. Stop doubting yourself and just go do it. That every Jewish people recognizes their value and sees what they have to do. And this is the statement of the Ishbitzer, but it's very interesting to me because of something that happened in his life. The Kutzker Rebbe was perhaps, if we would have to break up the Kutzker Hasidus. So the Kutzker Rebbe was in Kutzk, and he was sort of the major league of Kutzk. Right? That's the base measure you would go to, you would mature into it. When you were ready, the Kutzker Rebbe didn't like a lot of Talmidim. He used to say his biggest dream was to have 10 Talmidim on a mountaintop, and that's it. We would just try to seek out the MS together. That was it. But, and there was certain, some people say there's a certain hostility every time the Ishbitzer, well, not the Ishbitzer at that time, Rav Mordechai Yosef Leiner, in Tamashev, in the minor league yeshiva, would send up a Talmud because he thought he was ready to go to Tamashev, there was an added stress to the Kutzker Rebbe. An added stress. He didn't want more Talmidim. He wanted less Talmidim. And it sort of became a little hostile. 1839 comes to Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah was the time where the yeshivas came together in Kutzk. They would always come together, and if anyone's familiar with the hakafos, so every hakafa is after one of the ushpizin, right? So I think either number 5 or 6, maybe 6, is Yosef. I don't know what order they'd use, but I think the 6th one is Yosef. And every year, in the hakafa of Yosef, they would give it to Rav Mordechai Yosef Leiner, because of his name. He would lead the hakafa. And came Simchas Torah morning, and the Talmidim from Tamashev or with the Ishbitzer or the Mordechai Yosef Leiner in the motel nearby. For some reason, the Ishbitzer said, Mordechai Yosef Leiner said, I don't think we should go today. Every year they would go. And every year he would lead the Hakafah, the 6th Hakafah. He said, this year I'm not going to go. Talmidim were a little taken aback. Some people said, no, we have to go to the Kutzker Rebbe. He's the Rebbe. So they still went into the Beis Medrash. And at the 6th Aliyah, so someone's holding the Sefer Torah, and he has his talus over his head. He's about to start the Hakafa, and all of a sudden, I don't know if anyone knows familiar with the Kutzker Rebbe used to have his own little room, and he would stay in there, and he would often just seclude himself. He wouldn't come out and join festivities. But for this, the 6th Hakafa, he came out of his room, he walks over to the guy who's holding the Sefer Torah, and he rips the Sefer Torah out of his hands. He takes the Sefer Torah, then he looks at the guy, and he sees it wasn't Rav Mordechai Yosef Leiner. He gives back the Sefer Torah and goes back to his room. And all the Talmidim were shocked. All the Talmidim from Tamashev were like, oh my gosh, how did Rav Mordechai Yosef know what was going to happen? So they go back to Rav Mordechai Yosef Leiner and they say, how did you know? And I don't know if you know anything about Pshischa Hasidus, they're not into miracles. I mean, some of them, they have stories and things like that, but oftentimes they said, you know, we're you know, sort of more hardworking. We're not the sect of miraculous rabbis. So when they came back to Rav Mordechai Yosef Leiner, they said, how'd you know? He says, it wasn't a nevuah. It wasn't Ruach HaKodesh. And it's not one of the neflos of the Rebbe. Right? When I was putting on my shoes this morning, we learned this a couple days ago after 7 o'clock in the also, he said, for some reason, I put my left shoe on first. You're supposed to always put your right shoe on first. Then your left, then tie your left, then tie your right. So for some reason, I put my left shoe on, and I knew today was a bad day. I knew something was going to happen today. First of all, it's a very interesting story in terms of Nichush, right? That story of Rav. But he said something was going to happen today, and lo and behold, something happened. And then basically he says that night, Mila Hashem Eli, we're going back to Tamashev. Everyone should come to me. They have this whole Tehillim rally, and I think they even gather money together to give to the Katzke Rebbe in order to sort of, you know, give their severance pays or whatever. And then they go back to Tamashev. And that's the story. I don't know if he goes to Tamashev. He might go straight to Ishbitz. I'm not sure. Because Tamashev was Katzke Rebbe territory. Because it was his minor league yeshiva. And that's the story how the Katzke Rebbe and the Ishbitzer were on not such good terms. And if you ever look through the Ishbitzer Sfarim, so oftentimes they refer to the 12 or 13 years that he was with the Katzke Rebbe as if it was like he knew he was going to leave the whole time. It gets a little dicey between the two movements. But what's interesting is this is the same concept from the Ishbitzer that sounds like his idea here. He got a sign, according to him. He got a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that there was something going on today, and he just called it off. It was a sign. This Hashem sending me a message. This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm not going to think twice about it. And you should know, many of his Talmidim thought twice. Many of them went to the Katzke Rebbe, and even after they saw what happened in Neret Simchas Torah, they come back to the Me'ash Shilach. They come back to him, and they say, we still can't leave the Katzke Rebbe. He's still the Rebbe. And they go back to the Katzke Rebbe, and there's this whole thing. Some of them go to Ishbitz, and then some of them in the middle of the night go back to Katzke. And a lot of them were going back and forth. A lot of them were mefakvek in their own mind what they should be doing. And some of them went back to Katzke. And when they all come back to Katzke in the morning, the Katzke Rebbe gathers everybody in the Beis Medrash, and he says to them, this is the entirety of Katzke. No one else can come in. No one else can go out. Right? He circles his wagon and he goes, this is it. And he basically says, okay, now we're two separate movements. Katzke Rebbe accepted it to his own credit. But this is a similar idea, a similar concept, which is reflective of perhaps the greatest moment or the most pivotal moment in Ishbitzer Chassidus in terms of what the Ishbitzer is talking about here. That Hashem gave him a message and he went straight forward with it. It might be a little controversial. It might be a little something we're not comfortable with. But that's what the Ishbitzer is trying to say over here also. Kilo nachash b'Yaakov, when it's a situation where it's Yaakov, where you don't know what to do and it's not clear, okay, so then lo nachash, don't jump into it. But if it's a situation of Yisrael, and something comes to you, there's a sign, Hashem, it's clear to you what Hashem wants you to do, whether that means something which is an obvious mitzvah, or whether it means in this situation, in his situation, some kind of sign, so just go for it. Lo kesem b'Yisrael, don't go back and forth, don't be mesupak. Yiskaber kari and jump into it. So this is the lesson of the Ishbitzer, and I think it's also very relevant to what we're going to be observing on Sunday. Shiva Sabatam, as you know, the situation of Mamad Har Sinai unfortunately turning into the Egel Azav. One of the most profound contrasts between what was supposed to happen at Mamad Har Sinai and what ended up happening was the timing issue. Right? How long was it supposed to be until they got the Torah? 40 days and 40 nights. How long was it until they got the Egel Azav? Overnight. Right? When it came to the Torah, they were willing to wait. They were willing to anticipate it. They were willing to make sure they were doing the right thing. When it came to Egel Azav, they got this inclination, they got this Yetzer Hara, they just jumped at it. They didn't think about it at all. They didn't give it time. They just jumped right into it. They tried to make Aaron do it right away. And Aaron was the one that said, let's wait until tomorrow. We'll wait till tomorrow. You'll see. It'll be a good day. But they didn't want to wait. They jumped right into it. So the Ishbitzer is saying the opposite. When it's a situation which is not so clear, it's Moshe Rabbeinu is not coming down from the mountain. It's not clear what's going on. You don't jump in and say, let's do this. You have to take a step back. You have to think about it. Calculate again. But when it's a time, when it's clear as day, what Hashem wants from you, so you have to jump right into it. So that's the message of the Ishbitzer, this week's Parsha. Hopefully we can take it into our own lives, that we shouldn't feel any shame, we shouldn't feel any hesitancy. When there's something that we know is right, when there's something that Hashem wants us to do, we don't sit there and we wait and we think and we hesitate, but rather we jump right into it without any shame and without any holding back. Okay, Shkayach. Until next week.
Can I just be an example of falling straight into it?